Hello and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's weekly podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking this week, as always, with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello and welcome, Ed.
Jennifer, great to be back with you.
It is always wonderful to have you here, Ed. And, you know, people are going to be wondering, you did introduce us to the Puzzler last week. We are going to get to that. It's the cats and dogs and biscuits and divvying those up. We are going to get to that.
Thank you.
I'll ask you about that a little later. We're going to be talking about questions today and sort of how to be your own Socrates and how to craft really great questions. So I think this is funny. It's some sort of spiral of I don't know what that I'm asking you questions about asking questions, and we could just go around
and
around.
It's a meta,
right?
Meta show.
It's a meta show. So I guess the first question to ask is why are questions important?
The idea of, you know, when the teacher is not there to prompt us, how do we become our own teacher, which, of course, is a habit of lifelong learning. But the reality is, it's the art of creating questions. And this is, I think, a little bit subtle, because you think, well, sure, Ed, if I ask a question, I'll get the answer and I'll learn something. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a habit of living, of creating questions. And I don't care, Jennifer, if you ask them or not. It's an internal experience. And it's a way where you then go through life not as a passive observer of life's journey, but an active participant of life's adventure.
So you say creating questions. What do you mean about creating questions? You literally mean like, why is the sky blue? What are you talking about creating questions?
Exactly that. As you are stimulated by the world around you to constantly ask, what should I be asking here? What can I be asking? So it doesn't matter whether you're listening to NPR, whether you're looking at works of art in a museum, reading a book, doing something online, or even watching an inane sitcom on TV. We should always be challenging ourselves to create questions. And as a result, what will happen is we will actually see that thing in a deeper way. We become active listeners rather than passive listeners.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Oh, it is.
It makes me tired just when you say that. I don't want to be always thinking. I want to turn my brain off sometimes.
You should turn your brain off sometimes, but when it's turned on, it needs to be on 11, not on 4. And that's the point. This is not easy. And it's not easy to constantly do this. You know, when you're at a meeting, so you're leading a meeting, Jennifer. So here you are, you know, KUT, you're this big, high, important person. I'm sure you're always.
Not really.
Well, that's why we call it Higher Ed and not Higher Jennifer.
Yeah.
But the truth is that when you are leading a meeting, and people who are listening who lead meetings, you should never, ever give the prompt, are there any questions?
Why not? Oh, but everybody does that. Why not?
Because that's wrong. Because that presupposes the fact that there might not be. You have to always assume there are questions.
Oh.
You have to go in there and say, there are questions. So you go in and here's the prompt. What are your questions? Or what questions do you want to share with the group? Instead of saying, are there any? You should always assume as a thinking person, there are questions. And now the question is, where do we go from there?
Well, and so that example is a really great one for a lot of things. And one of them is it shows that there are better kinds of questions to ask and not so good questions. Like, are there any questions? You know, that didn't really get you very far, but what are your questions? So there is some art and thought that should go into crafting the actual question.
Yes, that's true. And you know, asking the right question versus asking the wrong question. So saying, you know, well, what can I do about traffic? Traffic in the central Texas area, you know, Georgetown, Austin, so awful. What are we going to do about that? Well, that's a question, but maybe it's not the best question. The question is, what can I do with my time effectively when I'm sitting on I-35 for about 45 minutes to go 3 yards? That's an interesting question, because maybe you can phone a family member who you haven't spoken to, your Aunt Minnie, or maybe you can listen to books on tape. But how do you use your time? That's now a better question. But I say, let's not even grade the questions. As long as you're generating questions, you're an active listener, an active thinker.
So the idea of generating questions, I want to sort of go back to school and training about that, because I'm wondering, I'm going to sort of make a supposition in this question that may or may not be true, that there are some educational situations that actually don't encourage active questioning or sort of critical thinking about that. They're more encouraging learn the answer.
Effective thinking. Effective we don't want critical thinking. People. We want effective
well,
people.
Well, I don't mean critical like that's a not attractive tie, which is not true. Just an example.
Wait a
minute. It's a gorgeous tie.
Is it Barrett to wear stripes and stripes? I have a striped shirt and a striped
you're
tie.
You're asking the wrong person, I'm telling you now. But I don't mean critical in a this is bad sense, but critical sort of an analytical way. So does our education system encourage us to be active thinkers like that? Because it seems like sometimes what we learn is just how to learn the answer to certain questions.
You're absolutely right. And so as a routine in this country, no, we do not encourage this. It is mindless mimicry. Memorize the date of this war and then reproduce it back. Memorize the artist of this painting and produce it back, rather than saying, when you look at this work, what are you drawn to ask? What are the clues here? And the answer is that when I teach, for example, you know, I was teaching calculus last semester at Southwestern University, it's all about not just creating the answers to questions, but creating new questions and questioning the answers, quite frankly. And the truth is, I assess this. So at the beginning of every class, I have all their names on index cards. I pick out a couple of them at random. And, you know, your name comes up, Jennifer. Okay, Jennifer, you're an official questioner.
Oh, what does that mean?
It means that part of your job before the end of that class, you have to raise a question, not answer one, but raise one. And it changes the dynamic of how you sit in that class because you have to engage. And that's what questions do. They force you to engage. We should not only have this at every level, from kindergarten all the way through, but it should be a feature that is prominent. So for example, on an exam, one of the questions might be, what's a good question to ask?
Okay, here's a good question. What is the answer to the puzzler with the dog and the cat and the biscuits?
Okay.
I tried to do it really quickly last week when you introduced it. I couldn't do it fast enough. And you said you wanted a clever solution. So
that's
what's
right.
My question is, what is that clever solution?
Great question, as all questions are. Let me remind everybody that you have 56 biscuits that are to feed 10 pets. The pets are either cats or dogs. Each dog is given 6 biscuits and each cat is given 5 biscuits. And the question is, how many dogs are there? So you could set it up as an algebra thing. You could do a trial and error. All those work and that's great. And you get lots of credit for that. I challenged our audience, to think about a really clever solution.
Yeah, what is the clever solution?
Here's the clever, easy solution. Again, let's intentionally fail, which we talked about
yes.
a while back. Let's assume that they're all cats. Here's an example where we're going to do something that's just not going to work.
Right.
So what if we assume they're all cats, an extreme case? Well, if they're all cats, that means that there's 5 biscuits for each animal, because there's 10 of them. That means that there's 50 biscuits. Well, we have 56, which means
right.
6 are left over.
Right.
So what do? Well, really, a cat is what? If I take a cat and add a biscuit, it becomes a dog.
What?
Well, because remember, the dogs require 6 biscuits and a cat requires 5. So really, if you think about it, a dog is nothing more than a cat plus a biscuit.
Oh, my head is totally exploding.
And so that means that if they were all cats, we'd be short by, we'd have 6 extra biscuits. So if we give 6 of those pets an extra biscuit, they become dogs. And therefore, the answer is 6 dogs.
You need to go to my house and tell my 2 cats how they're really dogs if I give them
only,
an extra biscuit.
Only if you give them an extra biscuit.
Right, if I give them an extra biscuit.
That's a great
biscuit.
Lesson that people are learning, that if you have a cat and you want to become a dog, give it an extra biscuit.
I love the cleverness of that answer. And this is the kind of thing we're going to be doing during higher ed. Next week, we're going to pose another puzzler. So keep your mind sharp thinking about that. So I kind of want to ask about answers.
Although
now.
Notice that in that answer, I raised a question, which what if they were all
yes.
cats?
Can you do that?
Yes, you can.
Wow. See, that seems like breaking another rule about questions and answers and learning. I love this.
Of course. You're supposed to break all the rules in education. That's what we're here for.
Well, that's a topic for another week. I can tell that. So, you know, this kind of makes me think of that thing about if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, you know, did it really fall? If I ask the greatest question ever crafted on the planet about the most deepest topic, and then I don't pay attention to the answer, you know, what's the value in that question if I don't know how to listen to the answer?
There's 2 elements here. And the element that we're talking about is the fact that creating the question. So if you create the question, then you have heard the question, and therefore it is not going unheard. That's the important thing, that we're talking about an internal experience. When you articulate and make that question into something that becomes external, well, now that can stimulate other people and also could provide for opportunities of learning some interesting new insights. But the point that we're trying to make is that by just creating the question, you really have already taken a step, because it will provoke thought. We're trying to be thought-provoking, not just on our show, but in life. We're trying to be thought-provoking. And a way to provoke thought is to wonder. And by wondering, even if you don't do it out loud, your mind begins to reel. And that's the point.
All right. So I want you to ask me a thought-provoking question.
Okay, so here's a thought-provoking question. We were on the air way back in the beginning of the academic year last year, and we had a great time together. I thought we had fun. Why did you have the idea of starting this program co-hosted by the two of us?
Do I have to answer that?
Well, yes. You wanted a question. Well, you don't have to, but there's a question.
Yeah, so
there's a real question. This is live. I want to hear what you have to say.
So part of the answer is, I think when people listen to the radio and listen to public radio, they have certain expectations about the kinds of discussions and interviews they're going to get. And I think our discussion was outside of that box. The kind of discussion we had, a little more freewheeling. You said some pretty provocative things that led people to think about some things, question some things. And that's kind of what, you know, lifelong learning is about. And I think, you know, you're pretty funny, too. So
thank you.
Put those together.
I was hoping that you would eventually circle around, because I knew you were going to talk about my tie. So I thought the very least you would do is talk about my personality.
Right.
So thank
you. It's radio, so the tie part doesn't matter so much. But part of our job here is to get people thinking. And I think we did that artfully in our discussion, and we're going to have a lot more of them.
Thank you.
So thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brain sharp and for delivering that very clever answer to the puzzler. I love it, and I can't wait for more. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can always keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT News.